Do you have a game blurb that you're putting in here, or are we just going to wing that too?
Hold on a second.
It's a winging it kind of night here on B Night. Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, friends and rivals. My name is Jared, and with me is my buzzy friend, Ian.
That's me.
We will be your hosts for the podcast. We are honored and grateful that you've joined us here at our table. Here at the Game Table Podcast, we take a look at various board, card, and other tabletop games. We give an overview, provide a little insight on how to play, and share some of our thoughts, all in an attempt to give you an idea of how well it would fit for you and your table. Today, we will be looking at Apiary, designed by Connie Vogelman, artwork created by Quan Chai Moraya, and published by the Blessed Stonemaier Games.
Oh, Stonemaier. Apiary is a 1-5 player worker placement game where players will take on the role as the humble honeybee.
Buzzy buzz buzz.
In this distant future where humans no longer exist, these honeybees will use their evolutionary skills to create a beetopia.
Oh-ho.
The bees will do this in many different ways via actions on the board, and whichever bee player has the most points at the end of the game will be crowned the ultimate queen bee. Let's review Apiary. Well, Jared.
Ian.
I've got something for you.
Oh, is it a question that I'm not prepared for?
Exactly. Always.
Perfect. You know it.
All right. So what would be the most interesting outer space? Hold on. Let's rephrase. Let's start over. What is the most interesting outer space concept to you as far as like outer space travel, you know, being forced off Earth itself to create a new home world, or just exploring, you know, space itself just for fun? And
just
then what
kicks.
Job would you have? What job would you have inside this concept that you just love so much?
All right, so we're not picking an IP. We're picking, like, if I had to say this would be the coolest concept to ship off into space, what would it be?
Yeah, I mean, you can use an IP to help, you know, explain this place of yours.
Okay, well.
Well, while you're going, while you're thinking, you're not doing anything.
I'm not going. I've stopped.
I'm going to relate it to a couple different movies that I know.
Yeah, I figured you would.
Yeah, so one, Interstellar, and then, what's the movie with Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence? They're on this, like, weird ship planet thing because they got removed from Earth. Anyway, basically, we've been shipped out to space because the Earth is no longer habitable. And that's this world that I live in. It's like we have to find a new home and we haven't found it yet. I feel like I would be some type of like, I don't think I would have a very important role whatsoever, but I could be like the bartender. This just the ship of people that is, we're just sloshed all the time. I don't know. What do you do in space when you're looking for a new home? I have no idea. But I'll make some drinks for everybody. We'll have a good time. I think it'd be fun. Let's just, you know, let's explore what's out there and just, you know, we're here. We're on a ship. We're looking for life or a place to live anyway. I think that's what I'd be. I don't think I'd be very important whatsoever, though. I would not be making any decisions.
Buddy,
I'd just be serving up.
I feel like you will never get a call from NASA, but Hollywood might come calling at some point when they want to do some B-rated space movie about
probably, who knows,
about a bartender making his way in the galaxy.
My phone is available.
Perfect. Well, Christopher Nolan, you have been told that a space bartender is available if you ever need one. The movie that you're referring to is Passengers, by the way.
That's right. Passengers. Yes. Excellent movie. Excellent film.
I mean, I'm trying not to take the movie route because I feel like the easy cop-out answer is, Ian, you're giving me the opportunity to say that I can be a Jedi. I mean, I feel like that's the easy answer here.
Right.
But if we're talking like a more realistic sense.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, this idea is stuck in my head and it's very off the wall. So I would like a world where we encounter an alien species in space. You know, this a little bit in the distant future. I'm a little bit older and we have made contact, which has advanced our ability to go into space. And we started building various space stations, colonies, what have you. And the first interspecies marriage has to take place.
Oh,
I want to be as a pastor who is ordained. I want to officiate that wedding. I feel like that would be game changing.
Yes.
So that is right my there. Hopes and dreams right there.
Yep. I'll be the bartender.
Perfect. We've got this pretty much done. I mean,
yeah, we're good. We're golden.
Incredible.
This marriage is meant to be. I don't know who it is yet, but we'll be there.
Probably someone who was just born. I mean, if we're being honest. So
there you go.
We'll find out. Future listener.
That's right. Well,
incredible.
I do have a B fact.
I'm not surprised. Go for it. I can't wait.
So, I mean, it's not, I don't know. This is more of a space bee fact. This game is about bees in space.
And humans are dead.
And humans are dead. They have put bees in space. NASA has done it. It's a thing. And this happened in the 80s. Of course it did. In 1987, they sent 3,500 bees, actually, to space. And it was a type of a honeycomb. It's a type of honeybee, but they built honeycombs in space. And basically, they were just studying the way that they built honeycombs and how they survived in space. And in the end, it didn't prove a whole lot, but they did survive. And so,
wow.
I don't know. It's not looking good for the human race because these bees are be able to create different structures and all this inside space in 1987. So, and NASA did this, which is wild.
I mean, to be fair, though, the little game blurb never implies that bees killed off the humans.
No.
They just decided to move
on. It doesn't disregard it either. It's a possibility.
That is true. That is very true.
It literally says, in the description of the game, the human's demise, unknown.
Keep your head on a
swivel.
Question mark. That's what you got to do.
Honeybees.
Never know when the bees are going to become super intelligent and just take it all over.
And also, there is, and now I can't remember, but there is a type of honeybee. Yeah, it's a type of pollinating bee that creates honeycombs and stuff by itself. It's an individual, singular bee that creates its habitat for itself. It doesn't live in a colony. It's a very odd type bee. And they did put that one in space, I think, in the 2000s at some point recently. I think 2016 or something like that. So they've also done others. And that would be the one. That'd be the one that'd get us. It's going to be that self-sufficient, independent bee that's going to get us all. So just watch out for those ones.
Very interesting. I mean,
yeah.
I never knew there was a lone bee. I thought it was way more of a hive situation going on.
Nope. There is one. I don't remember the name of it, but it's there.
Much like this podcast, there's an exception to every rule. So,
and every game.
That's right.
Every rule of a game.
That's right. All right.
Well, speaking of rules.
Well, before we do that, I want to make sure we haven't done this in a while.
Yeah,
but I want to make sure that we touch on our designer friend here because
she deserves the credit.
She deserves the credit. And I will just quickly note as we're finishing up talking about the overarching theme through our questions here. And if it was not for Stonemaier, there is 0% chance that I would have bought this game because I took one look at Bees in Space and I'm like, I don't get it. It didn't speak to me. But
right.
I am very impressed with our designer here. Her name is Connie Vogelman. This is, in fact, her first game.
Wow. Yeah, that's ridiculous. This game is very heavy and has some absolutely brilliant ideas displayed. And yeah, that's crazy. She must have a lot of experience and a lot of good ideas and is very smart put this all together.
She is an attorney by day.
Okay.
So there is definitely some intelligence going on in that brain of hers. So I listened to an interview that she did a couple months ago and then also read a different one. So if you want to check those out, I will have them linked in the episode description. One, the written interview is from gamingtrend.com. and Champions Corner did a video interview on YouTube. Feel free to go check those out. But I just pulled a couple of quick things from there that I wanted to talk through. So she was introduced to games in law school, and then like her whole circle of friends kind of that became the thing. And I was really impressed by her story here about how she got into game design, because it was actually her partner, David, who had a game design idea that he kind of dove into. And she was like, okay, I'll help. I'll do some play testing, a little bit of graphic design, things like that, but really wanted it to like be his project as whatever. It didn't pan out. He kind of fell out of, you know, desire to do it, found out really quickly. He did not like game design, but she fell in love with it. So it's kind of interesting how that kind of thing can kind of fall into place the way that it does.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was a cool little story. And she's been very vocal about wanting to spread diversity into the gaming hobby, which I'm all for. A lot of conventions that I go to, it's mostly white dudes that I just see everywhere. But
for sure,
I love, you know, getting my girls into the hobby. Anna's really into it. I know Julia is too. And one of the things that one comment that she made about it that really stuck out to me is that diversity, if you want diversity with designers and publishers and all of that, it has to all start at the base level. So including people when it comes to game nights or welcoming people at conventions and just introducing yourself and letting them feel welcome. That becoming a welcoming group is the path to let diversity continue to grow through your hobby. I thought that was really well said. She said it better than me, actually.
No, that's very wise and very true. Is that, when it comes down to diversity, how do we create a more diverse world? It starts with the individual.
That's right.
It's right there.
So I think Apiary is going to be a really big success for her. And I know that they've said she's already got more projects in the works. They've announced one of those projects. It's called Wormspan, also going to come from Stonemaier. But I know that she's got other stuff going on too. And excited to see, because I was really impressed. I mean, we talked about other first designers with Tenpenny Parks, what Nate Linhart did there. But I think Connie took it to a new level. I was really impressed with Nate's, but this was really good. And it brought some innovation to the hobby, which I really liked.
For sure. Yeah, totally.
So, and then, you know, Ian, as we have to do, Stonemaier is God's country when it comes to board
God's
games.
Country.
So please go check them out and all of their awesome games.
Yes.
That's all I need to say, because I've talked about them a lot.
Well, you know what Stonemaier games we like. So this
if
is just
you
as the
don't,
list.
Then you have not listened to us before.
Yeah, go listen to the other episodes. We'd appreciate it.
That's right. We've got My Little Scythe, Between Two Castles. Or no, sorry, Between Two Cities is the one that we did. And I'm sure more to come.
Wingspan.
Wingspan's another one. Now Apiary. Yep. So you've got lots of choices to go check out other episodes that we've done.
A lot of options.
Man, so good. All right, buddy.
All right.
Yep. Go for it.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to explain the whole thing, but Apiary, the goal, like I said before, the goal is for each player to work to build their best beehive in space.
In space!
The player who scores the most points at the end of all this will be declared the winner. Each player is given a player board, a hive playmat, a bee faction tile, worker bees, hibernation tokens, and starting resources based off the faction that they are starting with. Apiary is played in turns, starting with the first player. There are no rounds, so you just continuously play around the board until the game ends or the game end state has triggered. When this is triggered, all hibernation spaces have been filled or all player hibernation tokens have been placed on the main board. So one of those two ends the game. And then you'll play one more round after that point.
Yep.
And I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah. So just to clarify on that end game, because I think Ian got a little twisted on the words
that was
poorly
a little confusing.
Typed in. The end game is triggered when either all hibernation spaces on the board have been filled or all of one player's hibernation tokens have been placed on the main board. At that point, like he said, there is one more round of play and then the game will end and whoever has the most points wins. There's lots of different things going on in this game. It's going to feel like I'm throwing a lot at you if I were to go through all of it. I'm going to do my best just to summarize, because this isn't a how to play video so much as we're trying to give you an idea as we talk through the rest of it. So in front of you is a place where you can house your workers, a place where they can come back to you, your hibernation tokens they haven't spent yet, any bonus tokens that you've received through exploration, things like that. And then you also have a player mat, which has an outline of a hive, a space hive specifically, because I know that a normal beehive does not look like these.
Exactly. They've created a new hive.
That's right. New hives, more advanced and intelligent than before.
Exactly.
But basically, it gives you a space where you can house the various hex tiles that you're going to buy. And that is where you will also house your resources and things of that nature. On your turn, you can do one of two things. You can either take one of your worker bees, and these worker bees have four sides to them, numbered 1, 2, 3, or 4. That determines the amount of strength that each worker bee has. So you will have the opportunity to place one of those worker bees into a location and do that location's action, or you can retrieve. We'll go over retrieving in a little bit. If you are going to do one of the six action spaces, you can either explore, grow, carve, convert, research, or advance. If you explore, this is basically where you get your resources. There is a queen bee ship that you can move around the board depending upon the amount of strength of your worker bee that you place on this action. So if you place a strength 2 worker, you can move it 2 spaces. If there's already a planet there, you will claim the resources that are on it. Or if there's no planet there yet, you'll get a bonus for exploring new space, and you'll still get resources based on the planet that you find. Next is grow. This is where you get new workers. So each person is going to get a faction to start the game, and that will determine how many workers that you start the game with in addition to the faction's ability. To get more workers, you can have up to 4 at a time. You have to go to this grow space. You'll spend resources to be able to gain them, or you could potentially gain more room to add onto your hive. If you carve, you can only take a strength 4 worker there, but then once you pay the cost for the tile, you're adding an endgame scoring feature that'll be worth a lot of points. This is a very important part of the game that you want to make sure that you're getting at least one of these so that you're getting additional scoring. It's not required, but it definitely helps. Converting is taking those resources that you've earned either through exploring or other means and converting them into other resources. This is important so that you get the all-important wax and honey, which are much more valuable than the basic 3 resources of fiber, pollen, or water. When you research, you are able to draw cards. These cards can do a couple of different things. They are either seeds that you can plant that will be worth points at the end of the game, depending on what they require. They will count as an additional basic resource if you want, or they have a cool ability that can be played on your turn in addition to the worker that you play. Some of the abilities are really turn breaking and can really be a game changer for you. So I really like those. And then last is advance. Advance is where you buy most of your tiles that are going to go into your hive. There's farms, recruits, and developments. Farms are basically how you gain a lot of income without having to go exploring again. So when you retrieve your workers, which we'll talk about in a minute, then you gain the income on those farms. If you get a recruit, that typically has an ongoing ability either associated with one of the 6 actions or just a trigger ability that will happen throughout the game. And then development tiles are powerful one-time abilities. They still take up a space in your hive, but they have a thing going on that gets you either a lot of resources or lets you do something that changes the game state, which is really nice. So those are all the 6 different actions. Like I said, the other option is to retrieve. When you retrieve, you take all of your bees that are on the board back into your active zone for your workers. Each bee that you bring back will let you trigger 1 farm. 2 bees cannot trigger 1 farm, but you can collect for each farm as long as you pull that many bees back. So if I pull back 3 bees, I could potentially get 3 farms triggered for the income. The strength does not matter. One other important thing to note, that whenever you retrieve, you will increase the strength of your bee by 1, which is very important because the stronger your bees are, the better that they can do for you going forward. One more thing to note, the most innovative part of this game and my favorite piece is the bumping mechanic. So this is a worker placement game. In a lot of worker placement games, when one player places their worker on an action space, nobody else can go there because that space is taken. However, this game has a bumping mechanic.
Yep.
The way it works, you have the option if you want to, let's say you want to go research, you could bump the other player's bee out of that space. But there's a trade-off. If you do that, they're going to get that worker bee back. And it's going to bump it up one strength as well. It's a give and take. Do you want to give your opponent more workers for that space? Or do you want to find another space to go? You can also bump your own bees.
You can. It's so cool.
Also really nice. So there's a lot of different things going on. There's a couple other scoring mechanisms that we didn't talk about, but I don't know that they're pivotal for the discussion that we're going to have, but they are pivotal for the game.
Yeah.
Definitely check out the Queen's favorite track because that can be a spicy amount of points.
That's right. So when you bump another player's B, and let's say it's at a 3, it would bump it to a 4, and then it goes back to that player's board. And the same thing if you were to bump your own or when somebody bumps yours. And so you have the option of when somebody bumps your own that you can put it inside the, what's that zone called?
The landing area. Which, if you put in the landing area, it does not increase its strength.
Yes, not yet. Also, I don't know if you mentioned this, but like once you bump somebody and they have a 4.
That's right. This is a good point.
That 4 will not go back to their play area. It'll go to out of play and it'll hibernate and they'll get to place a hibernation token. And the more hibernation tokens are placed, that's how the game end would trigger. And so that's how it's at. So when a bee goes from 4 and you either retreat or it gets bumped as a 4, that bee goes off the board and you can get it back via one of the actions, but it becomes a hibernation token and you place a hibernation token or whoever's bee it is. And that ends the game at some point because there's only so many spots for those hibernation tokens to go out onto. And you'll get bonus points and stuff via that board. It's like there's so many spaces on this board. It's crazy.
There's a lot.
There's a normal work. I mean, it's like normal worker placement, though. So if you've played other worker placement games, you'll know how this plays. It plays like other ones as far as like the options to do and the way you can play. There's tons of options. Again, that one mechanic of bumping is very different and very unique to this game and is an incredible idea and very well thought out. And the way it plays also is very efficient. And adds a lot of excitement for me because I like worker placement games for sure. But this just adds a new twist that keeps it interesting and different. And it doesn't compare to any others because of that mechanic.
The bumping mechanic is probably my favorite mechanic in any worker placement game that I've played.
Yeah,
it really changes the way worker placements are done.
Totally.
And I really enjoy that.
Yeah. So, you know, looking at that, is there anything else for rules that you're wanting to go over?
I think that gives a decent overview and then we can kind of leave it there. We'll have a how to play video in the links and if you want to learn how to play, they can do that.
Yeah.
And then we can go ahead and talk about it. So Ian, what draws you to this game?
It's just so different. There are a lot of worker placements. And again, I mentioned before, I like them. I really do. I like the way they play. I think it's probably one of my more favorite mechanics. It depends. If I want to sit down and play like a heavy game, a worker placement is fits that mold for me because I can think through and be very thorough and be very like strategic and have a game plan before I even go into the game, especially based on like what kind of, you know, faction in this I get or player abilities that you get. It really sets you up. You're like, okay, this is what I'm doing. You pick a strategy and you stick with it. And sometimes you adapt, but like, this is what I'm going for this game. I've played this game a couple of times. I'm going to try it this way. And worker placements really allow you to do that because there are usually many different ways to play it. There's not one way. And if it's a good game, in my mind, there's many different ways to play it. There's many different strategies. And the worker placement style really opens up the doors for like creativity and being able to create your own winning strategy. And that's what this game does. It just does it in a different way because it forces you to truly think about how your actions affect other players, especially when you bump somebody, because you're helping them in the end. Every time you bump somebody, you're, you know, shortening the game in a way, because the higher they go to 4, the more bees are going to be removed, the more hibernation tokens in the game end. And so you're constantly looking at the board, viewing what other players have done and where their bees are and where you want to go, because you're going to bump them if you want to go there. Again, you're forcing the players to think ahead. Always being intentional about when you're placing things and where you're placing things and the timing of each of those things. You know, there's sometimes where I'm sitting there, I'm like, I really want to play this right now, or I want to go here. I want to go to advance, or I want to do this. I want to go research. I need to wait a turn to do that because they're there or they're not there yet. Whatever it is, there's just so many different opportunities and things you're looking for as a board state before you go and do something. And again, worker placement, you want to be the first to get there sometimes, but other times maybe you don't, because one thing you did mention, is it Advance, the one where you buy new?
Yeah, the new tiles.
Yeah, new tiles. So in that location, there are three slots, and each of those slots, you know, you have to have a certain amount of buying power, or basically B power, in that location. And so if you're there by yourself, you only get a plus one. And unless you have a really strong B, you can't even buy the furthest to the right tile. A small number, you can only buy the first tile in the trio.
Right.
But if you want somebody to go there first, even if they put a two down and then you have a two after that, like, it opens up the door. So sometimes you don't want to go there first. You want them to go, bump them down, and it just creates, there's just so many more timing issues and timing things and interactions happening in this. It's not adding an overwhelming amount to the player, because it's not like, okay, I have to think seven turns ahead when he plays here. No, it's, you're just reacting in real time, obviously, and there's things that you're waiting for, but it's not like hurting my brain thinking about it. You are focusing about the other players in my mind a lot more, other than like, oh, I don't want them to take my spot. That happens in all these games, but really thinking ahead and thinking, okay, well, which locations do I want? Which ones am I okay with them being there first? Which ones am I okay with being there second? And how do I, you know, there's a couple locations where the numbers get added together. And so all of that fascinating timing and mechanics there that really draw the player in, because there's just so many decisions to be made. And in my mind, they're not super overwhelming. Like the first game, maybe like you're really like, okay, well, how do I even play? Obviously. But in the end, it's just like, you're kind of looking at the board state and seeing what you want to do with your turn. And it just adds so much to a worker placement that is just so different. And that's a massive, massive draw.
One of the things that I would advise people going forward, if they pick up this game, you and I, when we first played it, we tried to absorb the whole board together.
Yeah.
And I think instead, if you break the board down into those six different actions, it becomes a lot easier to choke down.
Yeah.
And at that point, you're just saying, okay, there's this whole board, but really I'm just choosing between these six individual small things, and then I'm going to try and string them together as I go along.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you do that for a lot of worker placements, but I think the way this board blends together, and it does it really well. The artwork on that is incredible. And I will say this too. This is one of the fastest I was wrong moments that I can just put out on the airwaves, but I was wrong about the theme. As I got into this and I played it more, I'm like, man, this is so cool. I would have never like realized on the face of it that this was such a cool theme. But now that I'm in it, I'm like, yeah, I could do a movie about bees in space and trying to figure it out or whatever. I think that'd be fun.
The way they tie the theme into it does work. It's not just slapped on. It's really not.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, it's not slapped on. It makes sense to the game. Even like it's the convert. So when you convert, it's like you pull a couple different resources together and create something new. And so like, what is it to create wax is what, the pollen and water?
I think it's a pollen and water. Yes.
Yeah. Pollen and water. And so it's genius, because that you have to convert, and there's basic resources, and then you have to convert them to, you know, honey or wax. Those are the two prime expensive resources that you use to buy other things or get some really expensive buildings that like give you victory points, the victory point end game tiles. And so that convert action is fascinating. And then there's a whole dance section that you can do a bee dance.
That's part of the convert as well.
And it's a part of the convert. Again, you need like a four to do it, but you can create your own new conversion table. And again, that sounds like a lot. It's really not. But again, there's a lot in this game. There is. It's a heavy game. I'm not going to say that it's not. This is a heavy game. And if you don't like heavy games, then maybe try this out. I don't know. But but this game does add a lot. It's a lot of cool decision making. It's cool decision making. Mm-hmm. It's not monotonous. It's not boring. It's not dumb. Like these are cool,
very engaging.
Fun, engaging decisions that you're making. And time flies. Like time flies. That's funny. Bees flying in space. But anyway, I'll stop talking now.
No, I think, so you mentioned the weight, and I think that if you, so we talk about Stonemaier games a lot. If you really enjoy Wingspan, and want to try your hand at something just a tad heavier,
yeah,
I think this is it. This is an easy escalation to that next level. It feels very different from Wingspan, but I think if you can handle Wingspan, you're ready to jump into this. I don't know that I would say it's heavy as a pretty committed gamer. It's medium heavy, I would say. It sits in that realm. It's very thinky, but I don't think it's not anything insane in my opinion. And again, once you've gotten a game or two in, you know what you're doing as far as the different ways the game plays. And at that point, it's just a matter of figuring out the strategy you want to pursue.
Exactly. Yeah, no. And I think that adds to it all. Like it's not, I'm saying in general, it's on the heavier side of games.
You're correct. Yes.
It's not an easy lightweight game. It's a little heavier for a table. And if your family or friend group's down to play some a little bit heavier stuff and is interested, this one's good. I mean, solid. And we'll get to player we'll get to player counts and time and all that, but yeah, it's very solid in that regard in the way it allows players to do those things. And
yep.
And that's what you want. So as far as this game, though, I mean, have we talked about our favorite mechanic?
I think we've really hit our favorite mechanic. So we can, I mean, one more thing that I will add on that we didn't talk about in the how to play. So each of the six actions have a strength four power action.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also, when you combo it correctly, this game is all about creating the combos between either your strength four or tying things together with stuff that you've already added to your hive, or if it's using one of those power cards like I talked about, creating those combos is really important. And if you can use your strength four workers in the right way, then you can really jump ahead. And so I really like that aspect as well.
Yeah.
Of adding a little bit more. It's not just that it's a strength four worker. It also does something extra.
Yeah. And so with that, like, another favorite mechanic of mine is the research cards, the plant cards.
Yep.
Those cards are insane. And I think it takes this game because they basically do three things. They could be a resource. They can be victory points at the end of the game if you plant the card itself, or it has an ability on it, which is insane. Those abilities are so cool. And a lot of them are like very just easy, like simple things, but they are super impactful. And then other ones are like, oh yeah, you want to take another turn? Take another turn. And so those cards are so cool because you're drawing them. You're like, okay, this one's good. This one's okay. This one's really good. This one's I can't use just based off what I'm doing. But they're all could be super impactful at one point or another in a particular game. And so mentioning things that I really like, that's one of them. Those cards that are in the research area. Ooh, those are so cool.
Man, for sure.
I remember one time I played like two back-to-back. I played one to take another turn, and then I played one that I could use one as like basically my B was a one. I could use it as like a four. Like that. Oh, it could be a game changer. I mean, you could like literally flip your score by snatching up like a really good token that somebody was going to play because you basically just went twice with two fours or something wild. Like, man, the combos are endless, and that is always what you're looking for in this game, is the combos are very, very cool.
They really are. And one other thing, going back to what you said about the diversity of this game and having multiple ways to win, there is only one action that is required that you kind of commit to, at least in our experience so far. And the other five are kind of take it as you want to.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you have to explore. You need resources, especially early in the game. So it almost feels required.
Yeah.
But after you've done that, you can venture out into any of the other five at whatever pace you want to. If you never want to go convert, you can do that and win the game. I've done it.
Yeah.
If you want to, focus on researching for days, which gives you all those cards, and not focusing on, say, carving, then you can probably pull that off because you're going to be given a lot of extra bonuses. So there's lots of different ways to play, and I like that you're not locked in. And I know that for some, I played with one person in particular, it felt too open-ended. Like you had too many choices of I could go in any direction that I want to, and I don't know that I feel guided one way or the other. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely plays into, for me, what this game is not doing or what it lacks. And that is being able to play casually.
Oh, that's true. It's not casual.
You cannot just like, ah, yeah, we're just going to sit down and play Apiary. What a great time. Woo. No, it's a great time, but like, you can't just like chill this game. It is a think. And it's not like overly complex, but you think about this game. You are constantly thinking on your turn, what do I do? What's the best decision? And usually it's probably the wrong one that you end up making, or at least for me. I always make the wrong decision. But in the end, yeah, it's really hard to just sit down and not think about this game. So if that's what you're trying to do, then stay away. I do also think, in my mind, if you fall behind, I feel like it's kind of hard to climb back in this game. It's not very forgiving, especially as a new player. I just, if you were new to playing in a group that's, you know, experienced, then don't plan on winning. It's going to be hard because there's just so much stuff to learn. And that's part of games. But it is tough as you fall behind because there's not any type of catch-up mechanic, honestly. I guess if all their Bs are maxing out at fours and they go back to ones and then yours are really strong again, potentially that's kind of the catch up mechanic, but it just doesn't feel like it's tough. Especially if you fall behind early and you're not experienced to know what you want to try and achieve, then it does get challenging because you don't continue because as you progress and you get better and you get more developed as the game goes on, you get more resources and then you just have a resource pool of being able to buy things. If you don't create that and stay up with the other players, they're going to start buying everything and you might not be able to get anything that you really wanted because they're going to get it first. And so that's my one issue. That could be any game though. I just know that it does happen in this. So just be, you know, weary of that because it can happen and it can be frustrating if it does happen to you. So, yeah, anyway.
I get that. I don't know, man. I'm thinking through it, and I don't know that I have a lot of critiques with this game. I agree that it is not friendly to new players, especially if you have an experienced player playing. It's much harder. So they have basic factions to give people, but they don't have... There's no other, like... Not that I've seen anyways, other real handicap, I guess, to kind of be like, okay, this is the simpler way to play. So there is that. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think for me, the thing that's lacking that I always look, whenever we open the box, I'm like, man, I wish there was more of this. I wish there was more hive mats than just the basic five. Because I've played...
Oh, there is only five in there.
Two, three, and four already. And so I've seen all the hive mats. And I've seen them regularly at this point, and we haven't even played a ton compared to what we play some of our games. And I just wish there was a little more variety there. Because once I like see, now I've gotten to the point where when I see who has what mat and I hear what their ability is, I'm like, okay, I think I have an idea of what they want to do. Which is, I guess that's fun, but I like the more seeing the new and the creative of the new thing instead of kind of getting an idea of what they're going to go for because of what they have.
Yeah.
So I wish, and obviously it's set up so that you could have an expansion with stuff like that.
Oh, for sure.
But
they could just add another board with a whole other action on it or something wild, you know?
Yeah, I guess so.
I wish that, you know, they should have just doubled the mat. This is five. They should have just had 10.
If they had 10, I would be completely satisfied.
Because there's plenty of factions. So like you have like 25 yes. factions. I mean, take five right. less factions out and add five more boards. Like honestly,
I get it. Cause it's a whole board versus sure. a little token, but
it's a cardboard piece. It's not even a board. It's just a piece of paper.
That's basically
true. Cardstock. So
one last thing that I'll add that I have seen in a couple of games, but not many. Teaching guides are great. And when you can take the time to add one more sheet of cardstock that has a front and back teaching guide. Incredible. I love it. I love having something that I can revert back to without having to have the whole rule book open. So yeah. Props to Stonemaier for throwing that in because I think that was an incredible ad.
Let's talk about players. Play interaction is high, very high.
Very high. Very yes. If you have not
gotten
that yet.
Highly interactive.
And, like, which I love, by the way.
Interaction.
I'm not into I like these solitaire games every once in a while. I think they're fine. There's certain instances where it works, but I love the interaction. I will say, though, it's not in a like aggressive taking you over and destroying all your lands kind of interaction.
I don't even think, is there anything that like ever takes resources or anything from somebody?
No, there's no aggressive play as far as that goes.
No.
Well, there's a lot of it's really great player interaction, actually,
yeah.
Because if you choose to interact with the other player, you're benefiting them in addition to getting what you want,
which is incredible. That's the best kind of interaction in my mind.
I hate
games that like basically you got screwed and they chose violence and there's nothing you could do to stop it and you didn't gain anything. I'm not a huge fan of games that do that personally.
Weird. You don't like dying?
No, I particularly not. No. But no, this game does have a very just balanced interaction. Very balanced. And it's excellent.
For sure.
Excellently excellent and well done and well thought out and designed. And speaking of player, so it's 1 to 5. There is a solo.
That's right.
Just like any Stonemaier. And then as far as up to 5, you've played that. Have you played 5?
I've not played 5.
Yep.
I played 2, 3, and 4.
Yep.
So the 4-player game took 2 hours, but
okay.
It was with 2 brand new players. So I agree with what's on the box that you can get a 60 to 90 minute game in for most player counts.
Yeah.
Once they've got a couple games under their belt, like obviously first game is a lot longer. But once you get to that 2 or 3 game mark, I think you can get into the 90 minute range for sure with the higher counts.
I mean, yeah, we played, I think our most recent game was 3-player and we got in an hour and a half, right?
Yeah, I think it was even a little bit less than that.
Yeah.
We kind of clipped at it and to be fair, like we were thinking about it, but I also felt like that game was a little more casual. We were kind of just hanging out at the same time and enjoying and catching up and all that. So
yeah.
There's a little room for that.
There is little room, but I was still just like head down on my turn, thinking really hard about my turn. So
you did. There was like 6 times where you're like, my brain.
Yeah. So it has moments of being able to talk at the table. There's definitely moments because it's 1 player at a time. And that the interaction between players on not your turn is like them handing you a B and you just turning it or not.
That's
so
right.
You have time to think and you can look at your card. Like it can be. Yes, you can definitely have conversation at the table. It's not like you're just head down thinking the entire time.
Sweet. All right, dude, let's talk grading and final thoughts and wrap this puppy up.
Yeah. Yep. Do you want to go first? No. I should go first because I think
you feeling like you should go first on this one?
I feel like I should.
Okay, that's fine. Go for it.
So real quick, to be clear, there are no expansions to this game yet. So it just came out in 2023.
No, this game's been out for like a month.
Yeah, so overall, this game is a masterpiece of design. It's just very thorough in the rules and the way all the action spaces work and they blend together, theme just encompasses the entire game. It just brings it all together as one big honeycomb of a design and it's all connected. It's just very well done. It's just an excellent, excellent design. I there's really no other words to really put towards it for me. It's just, it's very fun to play. It has a lot of critical decisions that you have to make. Player interaction really well. And so with all that, I would say I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10 for me. It has a space. It's not every game night I want to play this, but overall, if you're looking for something deeper and want to dive into a worker placement or a little heavier of a game, without doubt, I would definitely recommend this. It's a solid game. I mean, there's not much to say bad about it. Like it's just enjoyable. And the only thing that you're not going to enjoy about it is if you just don't like that aspect of a game. Like if you just don't want to play something super heavy, then this game, you don't want to play this one. And then it starts non-forgiving stuff. Like I was saying, like that happens in a lot of games. That's fine. Not something that you necessarily control a lot of times. It's just how games work. So nothing that like, it's not design issues that are my quibbles with it. It's just, it's a very well done game. It does make you feel like you're a honeybee in space and building a new reality and civilization for yourself. There's so many decisions to be made And yeah, very well done. Excellent, excellent game.
Nice. Yeah, I think Connie accidentally. I think that Connie absolutely nailed it with this game. Home run, just absolutely out of the park.
Yeah.
It well done on the design. Like I said at the beginning, I was very unsure about the theme, but the theme is very fun. It was incorporated the right way. It didn't take itself too seriously. The artwork really lended itself to that.
Yeah.
And really just created a space for a fun game.
Yeah.
I really enjoy this game. I really think that it's something where it creates a opportunity for people who are wanting to take a step to a heavier game. This creates an inviting experience to do that. It's not aggressive in a punishing sense. Mm. It has a lot of fun. It has a lot of options without being so overwhelming in the heavy sphere that you can't pick it up. So I really appreciate it for that. Again, going back to what she was talking about of the diversity, not just for diversity of people, but diversity of people to expand their gaming tastes to where they're not always scared to dive into that heavier space. Because once they play Apiary, they're like, okay, maybe I can try something else.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that aspect of this game as well. It does house one of my favorite mechanics in board gaming to this day. I know that there's several worker placement games that I've played, so I don't want to just blindly say off of recency bias that it's my favorite worker placement, but the bumping mechanic is definitely my favorite mechanic that I've experienced in a while. So props off to that. I think that overall, I'm going to give this game an 8.5, which might be the highest score I've given a game in the podcast at this point.
I think it's up there.
It is definitely top three or something like that. Yep. So it's very good. And I have a blast every time that I play it. It took me several plays before I actually won the game. But every time I finish and I'm like, man, that was so much fun. And I think about the ways that I could do better and I want to improve. I'm like you. I don't think I want it out on the table all the time, but I do know that when it's out on the table, it'll be a good time.
Agreed with all of that. Yeah. It doesn't have I don't want to sit and play it every time. My brain hurts too much thinking about these civilizations, but no, it is excellent and well done and always a fun time to play though.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, hey, thank you all so much for joining us today. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I get it. Shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast.com or, wait, that's totally wrong. I said that wrong in the last episode, too. If you don't like socials, shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com or find us on BGG. 5-star reviews, subscribing to your podcast player of choice, following us on socials if that's your thing, joining the conversation on Discord. These heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Angie Santiago for our cover art and to Anna Snyder who made the music. Join us next week as Faith and I dive into the animated deck-building world of Toy Story, Adventures and Obstacles. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
And watch out for those honeybees. They might get you. Bzzz.
Bzzz.